My man don't love me, treats me all so mean. My man, he don't love me, treats me awful mean. He's the lowest man that I've ever seen.
I fought all my life to be able to sing what I wanted, the way I wanted to sing it. Before I die, I want a place of my own where nobody can tell me when to go on. I might go on at 9 or 4 in the morning. I might sing 49 songs or one song. I might even get up and stop the band in the middle of a number and sing something I felt like singing. Although people sometimes act like they think so, a singer is not like a saxophone. If you don't sound right, you can't go out and get some new reeds, split them just right. A singer is only a voice, and a voice is completely dependent on the body God gave you. When you walk out there and open your mouth, you never know what's going to happen. I'm not supposed to get a toothache. I'm not supposed to get nervous. I can't throw up or get sick to my stomach. I'm not supposed to get the flu or have a sore throat. I'm supposed to go out there and look pretty and sing good and smile, and I just better. Why? Because I'm Billie Holiday, and I've been in trouble.
He wears high-draped pants, stripes are really yellow. He wears high-draped pants, stripes are really yellow. But when he starts in to love me, he is so fine and mellow.
That was the voice of singer and actress Abby Lincoln, reading from Lady Sings the Blues, Billie Holiday's autobiography. Billie's Blues, The Many Faces of Lady Day, I Wished on the Moon. She's been the subject of books, documentaries, albums, feature films. If you go to the record store and look under Billie Holiday, she's got as many albums as any of the best-known pop singers, dead or alive. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this Jazz Profiles, we salute the remarkable Billie Holiday.
The way you wear your hat, the way you sip your tea, the memory of all that, no, no, they can't take that away from me. The way your smile just beams, the way you sing off key, the way you haunt my dreams, no, no, they can't take that away from me.
Some say we've made Billie Holiday into a character of mythic proportions. Perhaps we have. But at the heart of most myths, there's a degree of truth. And in the case of an artist like Billie Holiday, there is greatness. What is the truth, the greatness of Billie Holiday? Is it the drama of her life, the obstacles she had to overcome? Is there something about her singing or the elegance she carried to the stage? Or maybe it's just that she knew how to tell a story.
Away from the city that hurts and mobs, I'm standing alone by the desolate docks in the still and the chill of the night. I see the horizon, the great unknown. My heart has an ache, it's as heavy as stone. Will the dawn coming on make it light? I cover the waterfront, I'm watching the sea. Will the one I love be coming back to me? I cover the waterfront in search of my love, and I'm covered by
while many people think of Billie Holiday in terms of her image as a tragic figure, I think there's a much more resonant statement to be made about her as an artist.
Robert O'Mealy is the author of Lady Day, The Many Faces of Billie Holiday, and a professor of English at Columbia University.
She managed in her own time to be able to confront an audience of dancers or of people who just came to have a good time and to please them and to make people jump. She was known as a rhythm singer to begin with, and she could meet people in a club and make them feel good. But she also was able to meet the needs of someone who might be sitting at the bar thinking things over or listening over the radio. She sang Summertime, and that's a good example of her capacity to take a song and to not only make it something of her own, but really to transform it. She doesn't sing the melody as Gershwin originally had in mind, but rather she changes it into something that's more in keeping with this kind of rhythm singer that she was at that point, but also to make it more than just a hymn to summer peace, to make it something ominous and even threatening.
I wasn't wild about any singer at that time. Singers used to get in the way. You know, they were ones that made all the money, and the musicians did all the work.
Bobby Tucker was one of Billie Holiday's closest friends and favorite accompanist.
If you talked to Lady Day, you couldn't understand what she was saying. Half the time she mumbled. But when she sang, there was no question about what the words were or what the words meant. When she sings, she puts herself into the story. My man. She says, it cost me a lot, but there's something that I've got. This is my man. And that particular line that he isn't good, he beats me too. You know, and that by this time I want to punch her boyfriend in the nose. Because she says it so you can see it.
But I love him. I don't know why I should. He isn't true. He beats me too. What can I do? Oh, my man, I love him so. He'll never know. All my life is just despair. But I don't care. When he takes me in his arms, the world is bright. All right. What's the difference if I say I'll go away when I know I'll come back on my knees someday? For whatever my man is, I'm his forevermore.
From a 1948 recording, Billie Holiday singing My Man with Bobby Tucker on piano. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles. Billie Holiday once said, "The whole basis for my singing is feeling. Unless I feel something, I can't sing." Billie was born in Baltimore, Maryland on April 7, 1915. She liked to tell stories about her childhood, maybe even spin some yarns about her formative years. One thing is certain, she had plenty to sing about. Here's Abby Lincoln reading from Billie Holiday's autobiography.
When I went into the scrubbing business, it was the end of roller skating, bike riding, and boxing, too. I used to like boxing. In school, they used to teach us girls to box, but I didn't keep it up. Once a girl hit me on the nose, and it just about finished me. I took my gloves off and beat the pants off of her. But whether I was riding a bike or scrubbing somebody's dirty bathroom floor, I used to love to sing all the time. I liked music. If there was a place where I could go and hear it, I went.
Nobody knows you when you're down and out. In my pocket, not one penny, and my friends, I haven't any, but if I ever get on my...
Alice Dean used to keep a whorehouse on the corner nearest our place, and I used to run errands for her and the girls. I was very commercial in those days. I'd never go to the store for anybody for less than a nickel or a dime. But I'd run all over for Alice and the girls, and I'd wash basins, put out the Life Boy soap and towels. When it came time to pay me, I used to tell her she could keep the money if she'd let me come up in her front parlor and listen to Louis Armstrong and Bessie Smith on her Victrola. A Victrola was a big deal in those days, and there weren't any parlors around that had one except Alice's. I spent many a wonderful hour there listening to Pops and Bessie. I remember Pops' recording of West End Blues and how it used to gas me. It was the first time I ever heard anybody sing without using any words.
Wad, wad, wad. Wad, 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 oh. Wad, 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 oh. Wad, 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 wad.
When Mom found out I was using my hard-earned money paying on Alice's parlor to listen to jazz on the Victrola, she nearly had a fit, too. I guess I'm not the only one who heard their first good jazz in a whorehouse. But I never tried to make anything of it. If I'd heard Louis and Bessie at a Girl Scout jamboree, I'd have loved it just the same. But a lot of white people first heard jazz in places like Alice Dean's, and they helped label jazz whorehouse music. I know this for sure, though. If I'd heard Pops and Bessie wailing through the window of some minister's front parlor, I'd have been running free errands for him, too.
Singer and actress Abby Lincoln, reading from Billie Holiday's autobiography, Lady Sings the Blues. While Baltimore may have been a great place for a jazz novice like the young Billie Holiday, to graduate to the big time, you had to go to Harlem. So that's where Billie went. She made her debut in front of the Apollo Theater's notoriously ruthless audience. In the early 1930s, she sang at such clubs as the Yeah Man and the Hacha Bar and Grill. Before Billie reached the age of 21, word had spread among musicians that there was a talented young singer who understood jazz. Writer Robert O'Mealy.
She came into an incredibly rich scene. The Ellington Band by then had come to New York and was beginning to make its name. As the 30s rolled along, the Basie Band would come in and do long stretches there. Generally speaking, big bands were hot, but there were also small groups along 133rd Street and other streets in Harlem where there was just simply one club after another, not unlike the clubs she'd known back in Baltimore, where as long as you could hold the crowd's attention, you could take a turn, and where eventually she began to be paid for her work. And she dug into that scene and was very quickly spotted as somebody who had this kind of radiance in her voice and this way that I've talked about before of of turning a song around.
Who do you think is coming to town? You'll never guess who. Lovable, huggable Emily Brown. Miss Brown to you. What if the rain comes pattering down? My heaven is blue. Tennessee is sending me Emily Brown. Miss Brown to you. I know her eyes are brilliant, but go slow, oh, oh, don't you all get too familiar. Why do you think she's coming to town? Just wait and you'll see the love of a little Miss Brown to you is baby to me. Yes, yes.
Her reputation began circulating among musicians before the general public knew about it. And what was shocking was that she was not just another singer looking for a chance to deliver a song. She had been trained as a jazz musician. She would listen to your intro on the piano and she would respond to that. She might change her own delivery so it would match what you had done. And a horn player would take a solo, and then when her turn would come again, she would respond to that. Now, this was certainly not done by most singers then or today. And so right away, especially the piano players, began to say, hey, this girl is not only foxy and fine, because she was a beautiful, beautiful woman, but she also is one of us. She can trade choruses with us.
Billie Holiday singing I'll Never Be the Same with Teddy Wilson's orchestra from a 1937 recording in New York. I'm Nancy Wilson. Just ahead, Billie Holiday meets the legendary record producer John Hammond and joins Count Basie's orchestra. Also, the story behind her protest song, Strange Fruit. You're listening to Jazz Profiles from NPR National Public Radio. Billie Holiday's rising popularity among musicians brought her to the attention of record producer John Hammond.
Back in 1933, I was hanging around nightclubs in Harlem, and there was a girl singer I liked particularly called Monette Moore. Monette had been working at the Covans Morocco Club, and she finally decided she'd leave, she'd better herself, and she got somebody to put up some money for her, take over a basement on 133rd Street, and it was called Monette's Place. But it was a speakeasy. It was in 33 when there was still prohibition. And I went there the opening night for Monette, you know, and Monette was working in a show with Clifton Webb, so she was late. And so I came down to this club, and instead of Monette singing, there was this girl, very young girl, chubby, and I thought quite beautiful. And it turned out that she was Billie Holiday.
John Hammond had already helped further the recording careers of Bessie Smith, Teddy Wilson, and Count Basie. Now he wanted to get Billie Holiday into the studio. The first in a long series of recording sessions was in 1937 with the popular bandleader Benny Goodman.
You don't have to have a hanker to be a broker or banker. No, sir, just simply be my mother's son-in-law. Needn't even think of trying to be a mighty social lion. Sipping tea if you'll be my mother's son-in-law. Ain't got the least desire to set the world on fire. Just wish you'd make it proper to call my old man Papa. You don't have to sing like Bledsoe. You can tell the world I said so. Can't you see you've got to be my mother's son-in-law?
I'd made a lot of wonderful records with Billy, but you know, there wasn't very much work for somebody as revolutionary as Billy, you know. She was not considered a commercial singer. And I had made all these records with Basie's sidemen, with Teddy Wilson, you see, with Lester Young, with Buck Clayton, with Jack Washington, with Walter Page, with Joe Jones, and Freddie Green. And they were all pulling for a girl singer. And there was a terrible difficulty in getting a girl singer with the band because Jimmy Rushing wanted to be the only singer with the band and resented bitterly that we should be getting a girl in as well as himself. But we succeeded, and she was with Basie's band for, I guess, 4 or 5 months.
Record producer John Hammond from an interview in the early 1980s. Count Basie once said of Holiday, "She fit in so easily. It was like having another soloist. All she needed was the routine, then she could come in with her eyes closed, no cues or signals." Biographer Robert O'Mealy says the association with Count Basie was perfect for Billie Holiday.
At that point in the 30s when she was with him in 37, his was known as the swingin'est band in the land. It was never not that. There's a record live at the Savoy of her doing Swing, Brother Swing, and they almost ripped the Savoy ballroom floorboards up.
Stop this diddle-daddle and this foolish prattle. Come on, kill me, Joe. Swing it, brother, swing. Deep rhythm captivates me. Hot rhythm stimulates me. Can't help but swing it, boy. Swing it, brother, swing.
She had friends in the band, Buck Clayton and others, Eddie Durham, who knew what she could do and who would write arrangements for her. I think her best friend in music was Lester Young, and he was in that band. And when you hear them together, you can hear that their friendship was an artistic friendship as well as a sort of affection. Now, it's also important to say that she was the only woman in that band, and traveling on the road, everybody I talked with confirms what Billy says in her autobiography. It was very tough to be in this men's club in a world, the jazz world is still a tough world for a woman to break into. What was it like in 1937? But she managed. She was a sister, she was a colleague. She was proud to say that she was, as it were, one of the boys.
The way you hold your knife, the way we dance till three, the way you change my life. No, no, they can't take that away from me. No, they can't take that away from me.
I was accused of romancing everyone in the band, and this was leading to dissension. This is a damn lie, and I said so. I wasn't doing anything with anybody in the band except one cat, and not very often with him at that. Living on the road with the band, nobody had time to sleep alone, let alone sleep with somebody. At night, as Lester used to say, we'd pull into a town, pay $2 to $4 for a room, shave and take a long look at the bed, go play the gig, come back and look at the bed again, and then get on the bus. We got so fed up with it one time, Lester and me, we threatened to resign and ended up getting a raise. I got raised to $15 a day, and Lester got boosted to $18.50. I thought this was just too marvelous for words. For my money, Lester was the world's greatest. I loved his music, and some of my favorite recordings are the ones with Lester's pretty solos. Lester sings with his horn. You listen to him and can almost hear the words. People think he's so cocky and secure, but you can hurt his feelings in 2 seconds. I know, because I found out once that I had. We've been hungry together, and I'll always love him and his horn.
I tell myself I'm through with love, and I'll have nothing more to do with love. I stay away, but every day I'm just fooling myself. I tell my friends that I don't care. I shrug my shoulders at the whole of, but they all know it isn't so. I'm just fooling myself, and every time I pass and see myself in the looking glass, I tip my hat and say, how do, you fool? You're throwing your life away. I'm acting gay, I'm acting proud. And every time I see you in a crowd, I may pretend, but in the end, I'm just fooling myself.
The time Billie Holiday spent with Count Basie's big band in the late 1930s made her a national star. Some of the swing songs and jump tunes she recorded with Teddy Wilson were on jukeboxes everywhere. And when she sang at clubs on New York's 52nd Street, they were so jammed you couldn't move. But Billie was ready to go solo. In 1939, she became the headline act at Cafe Society, New York's first integrated club in Greenwich Village. It was there that she gained her reputation as a mood singer with God Bless the Child, Don't Explain, and her signature protest song, Strange Fruit. Strange Fruit was originally a poem written by Lewis Allen, who had asked Billie if she could turn it into a song. At first, she was reluctant. Here was a song that used powerful imagery to denounce the lynchings that were going on in the South. But Billie Holiday's father had recently died, and Billie blamed racism for his death. Clarence Holiday had suffered from gas poisoning while fighting in France during World War I, causing permanent damage to his lungs. Later, when he was on tour in a small town in Texas with Don Redman's band, he caught a heavy chest cold. Knowing how difficult it was to find doctors who would treat African Americans, he waited until they reached Dallas before seeking help. Shortly after being admitted to a hospital for Army veterans, Clarence Holliday died from pneumonia. According to Robert O'Mealy, anger over this and other tragedies may have been why Billie Holiday agreed to sing Strange Fruit.
The strange fruit, of course, is the lynched person hanging from a poplar tree. Southern trees bear a strange fruit, the song says. And it comes along at a time in the wake of many, many lynchings that were being fought over by such organizations as the NAACP. She already had a huge African-American following. Well, now she had many people who were concerned about lynching, but who also were mad as hell about racism or about prejudice in general. It really is a song that makes you want to stop and think and calls you to political action if you read the song's implications. And I think that in 100 years, or how long will it take before we don't have prejudice in America? In 1,000 years, if we still have a record called Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday, the way she puts it together, the sound of her voice will continue to hold our attention.
Southern trees bear strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fair. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the tree to drop. Here is a strange and bitter
She was magical. And that's all of the great divas are like that.
Singer Abby Lincoln recorded a tribute album called Abby Sings Billie in 1992. When she first saw Billie Holiday perform, she says it left a lasting impression.
They come to the stage and they take. It's a provisional government. People don't talk. Their attention is riveted right there to her. For the first time I saw this. It was kind of effortless. She wasn't trying for anything. She just stood there with her beautiful self and told this story with her eyes shining and everything and her pretty face. And I thought, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be like Billie Holiday. Then for a while I was trying to be like Lena Horne. And when I saw Lena, I thought Lena was original like Billy, and she did the same thing. It was her stage. And people didn't talk, and they were riveted right there. I thought, okay, I'm not going to try and be like Lena Horne. I'm not going to try to be like Billie Holiday. I'm going to be myself like they are. That's what it is. It's being yourself. And it's an energy, and it's a magic, and the people can feel it. It's a direct communication. There's nothing greater in the world than a female on the stage.
That's the truth.
There's no greater love than what I feel for you. No greater love. No heart so true. What you sing to me, no greater love than what you bring to me. You're the sweetest thing I have ever known, and to think that you are mine alone. There is no greater love in all the world.
Billie Holiday singing There's No Greater Love at Carnegie Hall in 1947 with pianist Bobby Tucker. I'm Nancy Wilson. You're listening to Jazz Profiles.
One thing you can say about Billie Holiday, whether you were a fan or whether you didn't like her singing, it was totally her own style.
Pianist Marion McPartland met Billie Holiday when they were both performing at clubs in Chicago in the late 1930s. McPartland says Billie's style is marked by a loose, swinging way of singing a song.
She had a wonderful time sense, in as much as she could play around with the beat, and she just really took a song and did her own thing with it. I think a lot of people have tried to imitate her since, but I don't think anyone's successful, because the combination of her particular style of singing and her personality, I mean, it all went together. I mean, she just had a rather poignant, sad quality, and I guess I can relate to those things.
One of the songs I wrote and recorded as my marriage to Jimmy Monroe, written all over it.
Abby Lincoln, reading from Billie Holiday's autobiography, Lady Sings the Blues.
One night he came in with lipstick on his collar. Mom had moved to the Bronx by then, and we were staying there when we were in New York. I saw the lipstick. He saw I saw it, and he started explaining and explaining. I could stand anything but that. Lying to me was worse than anything he could have done with anybody. I cut him off just like that. Take a bath, man, I said. Don't explain it. That should have been the end of it, but that night stuck in my craw. I couldn't forget it. The words, don't explain, don't explain, kept going through my head. I had to get it out of my system some way, I guess. The more I thought about it, it changed from an ugly scene to a sad song. Soon I was singing phrases to myself. Suddenly I had a whole song.
Hush now,
don't explain. I know you raised Cain, but I'm glad you're back. Don't explain. Explain. You know that I love you, and what love endures. All my thoughts are of you, for I am so completely yours. Try to hear folks chatter, and I know you cheat, but right and wrong don't matter when you're with me, sweet.
Billie Holiday's influence on singers is widespread. From blues singer Etta James to Irish folk singer Mary Black. Frank Sinatra once said, "Billie Holiday was and still remains the greatest single musical influence on me." I got to know Billie from listening to the great Etta Jones. And Joni Mitchell says her two favorite singers are Edith Piaf and Billie Holiday.
Billie of the two is the most infectious. If I listen to her too much, some of her phrasing sneaks into it because she could sing the saddest topics, but somehow or other, the arcing of Billie's voice seemed to create a kind of an irony. And I love a lot of the duets that she did with Louis Armstrong, some of those sassy things.
Listen here, Pops. You know you lie about your youth.
I don't lie, baby. I'm just careless with the truth, that's
how
all.
How careless can you be?
I don't know.
With all young chicks, you try to make a flash.
No, baby, it ain't like that, no.
But you're still my good for nothing, my sweet hunk of trash.
I think I took this from Piaf and Billie Holiday, that many of the so-called great singers love their notes more than their text, and those women never forgot what it was that they were singing about, so that the note almost played second position to the text. Not that there was anything wrong with the chosen notes, or there was still beauty to them, but that the emphasis was on telling the story from the heart with truth, so that they were touching instead of just merely technical flash wizards. It wasn't just a nice person warmth, it was a transcendent heart. And you can't fake that stuff, you know. You can't sing like that without having come back from some pretty hard changes.
Comes a rainstorm, put your rubbers on your feet. Comes a snowstorm, you can get a little heat. Comes love, nothing can be done. Comes a fire, then you know just what to do. Blow a tire, you can buy another shoe. Comes love, nothing can be done. Don't try hiding, 'cause there isn't any use. You'll start sliding when your heart turns on the juice. Comes a headache, you can lose it in a day. Comes a toothache,
see your dentist right away. Comes love, nothing can be done. Comes a heat wave, you can hurry to the shore. Comes a summons, you can hide behind the door. Comes love, nothing can be done. Comes the measles, you can quarantine the room. Comes a mousy, you can chase it with a broom. Comes love, nothing can be done. That's all, brother. If you've ever been in love, that's all, brother. You know what I'm speaking of. Comes a nightmare, you can always stay awake. Comes depression, you may get another break. Comes love, nothing can be done.
Billie Holiday singing Comes Love with Harry Sweets Edison trumpet, Ben Webster tenor sax, Jimmy Rawls piano, Barney Kessel guitar, Red Mitchell bass, and Alvin Stoller drums. That's from the CD, Billie's Best, recorded in Los Angeles in 1957. Before that, you heard Billie in a duet with Louis Armstrong on My Sweet Hunk of Trash from a 1949 Decca recording. There's no shortage of information about how much Billie Holiday suffered, the bad men in her life, the drugs, her insatiable appetite for hard living. Her accompanist and friend, Bobby Tucker, says it was well known that many performers in the 1950s used drugs. But it was Billie Holiday who got arrested, went to jail, and made headlines. Singer and actor, Abby Lincoln.
There's a lot of focus on her, the things that people say she did. I'm sure that she did, too. She did whatever she wanted to do. But what lives is her music. Most artists that we know are like this. There's sometimes they don't have boundaries, and they're daring, and they're lonely, and they're miserable. Van Gogh. So she's just an artist. She wasn't a superhuman being. She wasn't God alone. But she brought the people an honest assessment of the world in which she lived. That's enough to revere somebody for in this world, where people sell everything they have and wish for money and walk over people's graves to make money for themselves. She never did any of those things. She's a great woman.
Money, you got lots of friends crowding round the door. When you're gone and spending ends, they don't come no more. Rich relations give crust of bread and such. You can help but don't take too much. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own.
The music Billie Holiday brought to people throughout the world reflects the best of American culture. She listened to great jazz musicians, learned from them, and then invented her own sound. Lady Day's inimitable style turned jazz singing in a different direction. Whether she was arching her notes or coming in just behind the beat, she was telling a story in a way we'd never heard before. And if you haven't heard her story, all you have to do is listen.
Love will make you drink and gamble, make you stay out all night long. Love will make you drink and gamble, make you stay out all night long. Love will make you do things that you know is wrong.
Our tribute to Billie Holiday was written and produced by Elizabeth Blair. Script editors were Murray Horowitz and Andy Trudeau. Post-production engineer was Andy Rosenberg. We also had help from our Los Angeles and New York bureaus. Special thanks to David Tarnow, Abby Lincoln, and Robert O'Mealy. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer is Madeline Smith. Website coordinator, Bettina Owens. To email us or get more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives.
Love is just like a faucet. It turns off and on. Love is like a faucet. It turns off and on. Sometimes when you think it's on, baby, it has turned off and gone.
Additional support has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.